This is the Africa service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
Stay tuned for our bulletin of church news, which will be followed by Panorama, and then our feature, Justice and Peace. We shall close with this sports roundup. I am John Baptist Tumusime. Pope Francis issued a message on X, the former Twitter, on Tuesday, wishing Eastern churches that are in communion with the Latin Church a Merry Christmas. These churches follow the Julian calendar and celebrated Christmas this Tuesday, January 7th, 2025. The Pope prayed for the faithful to reap the graces of God that come with the birth of Christ. He in particular prayed for those who are suffering due to ongoing conflicts, imploring Jesus, the Prince of Peace, to bring them peace and serenity. The Holy Father issued another message on Tuesday afternoon, stating that even in the darkest of nights, a star shines. It is the star of Jesus who comes to care for our fragile humanity. Let us set out towards him. Let us not give indifference and resignation the power to trap us in the sadness of a flat life. One of the Eastern Catholic churches in communion with the Latin Church is that in Ethiopia. Its primate, Cardinal Sulafiri Bahenayesus, who serves as Archbishop of Addis Ababa, issued a message at the weekend calling for peace in the country. He noted in the message that God intended for human beings to live in peace and happiness, and that human beings can live in peace in the world, not by force, but by doing justice and other actions that can create peace. He invited the faithful to promote peace, beginning with their families, in imitation of Jesus, the Prince of Peace. The Dicastery for Evangelization, which is entrusted with the organization of the Holy Year 2025, issued a statement on Tuesday saying that over 500,000 pilgrims have passed through the Holy Door of St. Peter's Basilica here in the Vatican since it was opened 2 weeks ago to launch the Jubilee Year. The pro-prefect of the Dicastery, Archbishop Rino Fisichella, told reporters that they are expecting an increase in the number of pilgrims in the coming days and assured them of a big welcome and security. The Diocese of Rome, of which Pope Francis is the bishop, has opened the holy doors of two other basilicas, that is, the Basilica of St. Paul outside the walls and the Basilica of St. John Lateran, which serves also as the Cathedral of the Diocese of Rome. To make the pilgrimage to the holy doors of the three basilicas, given the long lines of the faithful, it is necessary to book in advance on the Jubilee website, jubileum2025.va. Speaking about the number of people who have already booked, Archbishop Fisichella said in the coming month, many children, young people, adults, and the elderly will be coming for a pilgrimage. The Holy Year is dedicated to reconciliation, conversion, and spiritual renewal. The Archbishop of Freetown in Sierra Leone, His Grace Edward Tamba, has said that a government report that claims that he is satisfied with the proposed amendments to the controversial bill known as Safe Motherhood and Reproductive Health Care Act 2024, which seeks to legalize abortion in the country, are not true. Speaking from Freetown on Monday, he said he has not yet made his views on the bill. Sierra Leone's Ministry of Information and Civic Education published on Sunday a note saying Here are the amendments that made Bishop Tamba say the government has accommodated religious sensibilities, adding that the Archbishop had described the country's government as a listening one. Archbishop Tamba is the president of the Interreligious Council of Sierra Leone. He said he and other religious leaders will meet in the coming days to discuss the amendments and will be informing the public about their collective decision. The bill has already been condemned by the Bishop of the Catholic Diocese of Makeni and by the Africa Christian Professionals Forum, an organization that brings together Christian professionals from various denominations in different African countries who are committed to promoting and protecting family values. The International Organization for Migration has expressed concern about the situation of displaced Palestinians in Gaza, who are now sleeping in the open amidst winter freezing conditions and heavy rainfall. In a statement issued at the weekend, the agency said many children have already died in these conditions. The agency's Director General Amy Pope has called for the cessation of hostilities between the Israeli army and the Palestinian Hamas Islamic militants. Tens of thousands of civilians have been killed in the fighting that started in October 2023 with an attack on Israel by Hamas. The United Nations expert on human rights in Haiti, William O'Neill, has expressed concern over an increase on attacks against health facilities and health workers in Haiti by gangs that have been terrorizing the country for years. We have a report.
William O'Neill, who reports to the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, highlighted an attack on the Bernard Meves Hospital in Port-au-Prince on the 17th of December and the killing of several journalists and a police officer at the General Hospital on the 24th of December. The victims were attending the hospital's official reopening. Criminal gangs have murdered and kidnapped physicians, nurses and healthcare workers, including humanitarian workers, Mr. O'Neill said in a statement, adding that gangs had burned, ransacked and destroyed many hospitals and clinics, forcing many to close or suspend their operations. According to the rights expert, only 37% of health facilities in Port-au-Prince are fully functional. They remain difficult to access because of unchecked gangland violence in the capital that has put at risk the Haitian people and hundreds of thousands of children living in very precarious conditions, Mr. O'Neill stressed. He underscored repeated threats to attack health premises and cited reports that police officers were also allegedly involved. Daniel Johnson, UN News.
You are tuned to the English Africa service of Vatican Radio.
African News Panorama.
The winner of last month's presidential election in Ghana, John Dramani Mahama, was sworn in for his second term as president on Tuesday in Accra during a ceremony attended by several African heads of state and government. Before winning his first term, Mr. Mahama served as president of Ghana in 2012 when President John Evans Atta Mills died in office. He won a presidential election a few months later. The 66-year-old replaces Nana Akufo-Addo, who steps down after serving two terms, continuing Ghana's democratic tradition. Analysts and supporters of Mr. Mahama's National Democratic Congress, or NDC, see his political experience and a two-thirds majority in parliament as a strong mandate to take tough decisions and implement credible policies to improve livelihoods and regain investor confidence. Parts of Guinea's capital, Conakry, were on lockdown on Tuesday as civil society and opposition groups protested a ruling junta's missed deadline to launch a return to democracy. Guinea is one of several West African countries where the military has taken power and delayed a return to civilian rule. Colonel Mamadi Doumbouya, the junta leader in power since 2021, agreed in 2022 to launch a democratic transition by the 31st of December 2024. However, the expiration of that deadline came with more promises. In his New Year's message, Mr. Dumbuya said, without committing to a date, that a decree for a constitutional referendum will be signed to launch the democratic process. Activists and opposition groups condemned the announcement as a ploy to prolong the military rule. In a statement late on Monday, the First Vive the Guinée coalition group asked Guineans to stay indoors as a form of protest and accused the junta of holding Guinea hostage. In Nigeria, at least 46 people, including women and children, were kidnapped in a raid on Ghana town in the country's northwest Zamfara state. Residents and a local traditional leader said on Tuesday. The attack, which follows a similar mass kidnapping in the state last month, occurred on Sunday night, with dozens of gunmen on motorbikes unleashing a barrage of gunfire on the community. Northwest Nigeria has been plagued by armed gangs known locally as bandits who routinely terrorize communities, leaving a trail of death and kidnappings. Their victims include residents, farmers, students and motorists who are often held for ransom. Staying in Nigeria, an improvised explosive device detonated at a school on the outskirts of the federal capital Abuja on Monday, killing two people who were handling the bomb and injuring two others, police said. Mauritius has issued an arrest order for its former finance minister, Reganaden Padayachi, in relation to a probe into alleged embezzlement. The police notice published in local newspapers on Tuesday comes days after the arrest of the former central bank governor, Harvish Sigolam. Mr. Sigolam was released on bail over the weekend after he was detained on Friday and charged with conspiracy to commit fraud. The arrest order against the former finance minister and the charging of the former central bank chief were the first major moves by the government of Prime Minister Navin Ramgoolam. Mr. Ramgoolam has accused the previous administration of falsifying GDP, budget deficit, and public debt figures for years. You're tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
And now, our feature, Justice and Peace. The president of Rwanda, Paul Kagame, has advised Western leaders to go slow with their tendency to impose the Western mode of democracy on other countries, especially on developing countries of Africa, Asia, the Caribbean, and South America. Mr. Kagame was speaking a few days ago to Western reporters in New York at the United Nations Foreign Relations Office. Speaking in particular about Africa, he said there is no mode of democracy in which all African countries can fit, stressing that there are several factors which should determine which model a country should adopt. Imposing an inappropriate model, he added, causes many problems.
Democracy is democracy. Adding Western is okay, but all countries, all peoples of this world, can hardly fit into this definition because we come from different backgrounds, different places, different histories, different cultures, different contexts. Democracy is a principle all of us wish to associate with, but associate with in as far as the history, the culture, the context allows that, and to what extent. The West trying to tell everybody to fit into that sort of demand and description comes also with another connotation. While the West talks about and teaches so much about freedoms, normally are also associated with democracy, by indeed imposing or telling people how they should live their lives without this context, this history of values and cultures that people have been brought up into, is actually denying people freedom. On one hand, you're having people prescribing for others how they should live their lives, but the same people who also say they abide by freedoms and they want people to be free. How am I going to be free when you want to dictate to me how I should live my life?
Western democracy refers to a system of government practiced primarily in Western Europe and North America, characterized by representative government, whereby people elect their leaders. Governments respect civil liberties, also known as guarantees, and freedoms such as freedom of conscience, freedom of the press, freedom of religion, freedom of expression, freedom of assembly, the right to security and liberty, freedom of speech, the right to privacy, and the right to equal treatment under the law. Governments commit themselves not to violate either by legislation or judicial interpretation these liberties. The model also emphasizes the rule of law, which is ideally expected to be implemented by an independent judiciary. As a rule, Western democracy embraces a capitalist economic system. Western democracies emerged as a response to authoritarian regimes. Mr. Kagame noted with emphasis that countries that have accepted the dictates to adopt the Western model of democracy have run into difficulties because the model did not fit into the cultural, social, and political historical context of the people. But what is astonishing, he added, is that those Western leaders who imposed the model, sometimes with threats to cut aid or to impose sanctions, turned around to blame the African leaders for the problems that developed out of what they had imposed.
Take a case of Libya. Libya was no democracy. Gaddafi had problems across the continent. He had problems with his own people. Part of it was created from within on its own. Other things happened from outside, and they went to Libya, bombed everybody, and ended up with Gaddafi dying. What is happening in Libya now? People who wanted to create a different situation, maybe a better situation, maybe create some democracy in Libya, where are they, and what do we have? We can talk about many places in Africa, forgetting the way the societies are organized, how they have come to be the way they are, and maybe there are demands for changes across Africa. But these changes don't just happen overnight and don't happen anyhow. If you don't look at the situation you're having to deal with and understand it, and just say things must change, sometimes to the point of even dictating who must be what.
It is now 30 years since genocide was committed in Rwanda against ethnic Tutsis and moderate Hutus by the then extremist government allied militias, state police, and the National Army. The country is now experiencing the challenge of unity, given that the perpetrators of the genocide have declared war on the government. President Kagame narrated the pressure he faced a few years ago from Western leaders who wanted him to step down without even putting into consideration the challenges the country was facing and without consulting the people of Rwanda, and warned that the Western model of democracy cannot succeed out of the Western context.
In Rwanda, it was very ridiculous. Just before the constitution changed, we have friends all over in the United States, Europe, wherever. They would say, oh, no, President Kagame, you must go. I said, I'm happy to go. You know, other people can come and take over after you and things will be fine. I said, that's okay. I said, how do you want me to do it? They would even name Rwandese. So and so can, you know, do it and so. Or you can actually look for somebody, you can groom somebody and have him, you know, take over from you. I would point out a couple of weaknesses in that. I'm saying you are the people who are teaching us about democracy. At the same time, you are actually coming to me and saying, you know, so and so can actually be president of Rwanda. So you are the one choosing that double standard. For them, if that happened, it would be democracy. Second, I would say, if you are telling me to choose who takes over after me, again, it's not a democracy you are telling me actually that we should be respecting. You are saying either we choose or you choose. How about the people of Rwanda? I haven't heard of them in this decision.
That was President Paul Kagame of Rwanda speaking recently to reporters at the United Nations Foreign Relations Office in New York, USA. And that was Justice and Peace for this week.
This is a sports roundup and welcome to the program. My name is Kenyatta Godfrey Kampamba. After Rocky start to their campaign with two losses and a draw in their first three matches, the People's Elephant, the Enyimba, delivered a commanding performance to keep their slim continental hopes alive. Enyimba International finally found their rhythm in the Confederation of African Football Confederation Cup group stage, claiming an emphatic 4-1 victory over Mozambique's Black Bulls on Sunday at the Godswill Akpabio International Stadium in Uyo. Under the guidance of newly appointed coach Stanley Eguma and bolstered by the arrival of former Super Eagles striker Brown Ideye, Enyimba showcased their resilience and attacking prowess. The People's Elephant are still bottom of the group with 4 points from 4 matches, but if they can sustain the momentum, Enyimba may snatch one of the quarterfinal tickets up for grabs. Even though it appears their chances are slim, there is a figment of hope if Enyimba can pick points in their 2 remaining matches against Egyptian clubs Zamalek and Al Masry, especially if they beat the latter in their next home match. For many, Sunday's performance sends a clear message that the People's Elephant are back in the game. There is a lot of admiration for Sudan's Al Hilal that achieved a valuable draw on Sunday evening. This performance makes Al Hilal officially secure qualification to the quarterfinals of the Confederation of African Football Champions League. Al Hilal drew with its guest Mouloudia of Algiers with 1 goal for each team in the 4th round of the group stage of the Confederation of African Football Champions League to be the first to qualify. The Mouloudia of Algiers scored the lead goal in the first half, and Al Hilal achieved the equalizer in the second half of the second half. The match was held at the Sheikh Badia Stadium in the Mauritanian capital, Nouakchott. Since the conflict began in April last year, Sudan's players, many of them personally affected, have had no permanent base. The domestic league has been suspended, and home qualifiers have been played in Libya and neighboring South Sudan. So analysts say Sudan's securing qualification for the 2025 Africa Cup of Nations, the AFCON, has made all eyes turn to the job well done by their head coach Kwasi Appiah. Yet, no one understands how the Ghanaian defied the odds with a nation which has been engulfed in a 20-month civil war. Appiah has since told the media that qualifying for the AFCON was one of the targets he set for himself before he signed the contract. So achieving it was something that was on my heart, Appiah said, as he reflected on an extraordinary campaign. The draw for the Total Energies Confederation of African Football African Nations Championship CAN 2024 will be conducted in Kenya at Kenyatta International Convention Center in Nairobi on Wednesday, 15th January 2025. The much anticipated tournament is uniquely reserved for African footballers playing their trade in their domestic leagues and will be co-hosted by Kenya, Uganda and Tanzania between 1st and 28th February 2025. The tournament will be graced by several of African football's powerhouse nations, including reigning champions Senegal, who edged 2022 hosts Algeria in the final in Algiers 3 years ago to lift the title for the first time. As in previous editions, the Total Energies CAN 2024 promises to be a unique showcase of African football and a stepping stone for emerging talent to shine, such as Lamine Kamara, who has since become a global star and was recently voted Young Player of the Year at the 2024 CAF Awards. There is good news in Zambia, where government has handed over 80 hectares of land to the Football Association of Zambia for the construction of a technical center. The multi-million dollar facility will be located in Zambia's Chongwe district, which is a few minutes' drive away from the capital, Saka. Funded by World Football Governing Board, FIFA, the construction will start this year in 2025, and the project is expected to be complete within a three-year period. The technical center will have modern state-of-the-art football facilities and a new FAS headquarters. Zambia's Minister of Youth, Sport and Arts also indicated the fact that the facility will also have multiple training grounds, including artificial and natural turf for elite and grassroots football programs. The football governors in Zambia hope that the technical center will transform the football landscape in the country and will boost talent development, enhance women's football in addition to grassroots empowerment, and strengthen the national team. Apart from the technical facility, FIFA has already provided support for the rehabilitation of four provincial stadia, namely David Kaunda, Independence, Kaole, and Kasama. The government leased the four stadia to FAS, while FIFA provided the $1.5 million United States dollars funds for the rehabilitation project. And on that note, we come to the end of today's edition of our Sports Roundup. Until next week at the same time, my name is Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba.
You have been listening to the English Africa service of Vatican Radio, and I am Johnny Baptist Tomosime. In our next program at the same time tomorrow, you can hear our feature, Health and Healing, and our segment on the Holy Year 2025. Praised be Jesus Christ. Laudetur Jesus Christus. Vipiti umu jeyi mama we. Vipiti umu.